What's up, everybody? How you doing? I'm Tom. I'm an alcoholic. Probably just pretty much wrapped up my entire speech or presentation. Thank you. Garden Variety, just get a sponsor. Get sponsees. It'll work eventually. It's wonderful. I'm really honored to be here. When anyone asks me to be of service, hopefully you've learned you just got to say yes, you know. And when this one came along, I've heard about this meeting. I've never been here before. I see a lot of familiar faces, so it's awesome. I'll start out by saying that the newcomers that stood up in this meeting, thank you. You are the most important people here. So I'm blessed that you're here in this room tonight. My goal is to leave you with some of the insanity and the spiritual challenges that I went through. Turning it over, taking it back, turning it over, taking it back throughout my journey. But on September 7th of this past year, I celebrated 20 years of continuous sobriety. So, yeah, I'm an old man now. Which is wild because I'll just say my story really started. I got sober in Minnesota. I'm a Midwestern guy. I went to Hazelden. Any Hazelden people out there? There we go. But it didn't work, so that's part of my story. But my story started in the Monday after Thanksgiving of 2005. My sponsor, he picked me up outside of my sober house, drove me to downtown Minneapolis where the Hennepin County Sheriff Station was. I had one last Newport cigarette, and I'm not a smoker. Just go to rehab. You walk out of there a smoker. I don't know what it is about the rehab, but that's the way it is. I mean, I'm an athlete. I'm a type 1 diabetic. I don't smoke, except when I go to rehab. And I walked into the sheriff's station and I said, I think you guys have my name in there. And I told him my name. He's like, we've been looking for you. I bet he says that to everybody. Like, I'm not that important, to be honest with you. But all that being said, I put my stuff on the metal detector and I walked through the metal detector. I turned around to look at my sponsor and he said, you will be fine. This is the hardest year of my recovery this year. I'm already getting emotional. But I will say, those words are so meaningful to me today. And I'll get to why they are meaningful today towards the end here. But I was a DUI guy. I don't know if anybody likes to drink or looking for drugs. Or I know that's part of my story. I'm sorry, but it is. I'm sure none of you have tried anything but alcohol in this meeting, but I like to do it. It was in the late 90s, early 2000s. We didn't have Uber. We didn't have all this delivery services and all that stuff. We didn't have Uber Eats and whatever. I like to drink. I like to drive cars and listen to Motley Crue. I did. I'm a metalhead. I love all that stuff. And I probably had like a 99.97% success rate when I did that and not got caught, you know? But that 0.03%, I got caught 5 times. So, yeah. No bueno. No bueno. And I think I talked myself, talked out of it a couple times. But that being said, that's the truth. You know, I loved the effect that alcohol gave me. I loved it. You know, and I got to the point in my when I was really hitting my stride, where I would have 3 shots of Jaeger, three cold Heinekens, and I would line them up and hammer them, boom, 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 in my system in the first minute. I wanted to get that effect quickly. It's all I cared about, you know. And then the rest of the night I could chill and do my own thing, but I needed it immediately. I was talking to a friend the other day, and new guy having some relationship issues, and he was telling me about, you know, the chase of that relationship. I don't know if I should be in it, whatever. And I said, it's like when I used to score drugs. And I used to be excited about the call, the 20 calls, 30 calls, you know what I mean? And finally I got a hold of a person, finally I got the meeting place, finally I got the money, and finally I got the transit, and finally it was in my pocket. And as soon as I drove away, I was like, fuck, I'm screwed. Because now I know that I got to put it in my system. The fun is over, the chase is over. That's what I liked, you know? That's the effect that alcohol gave me. That's the effect that that insanity of the disease and alcoholism gave to me, right? Because I didn't have coping skills, you know? And then there's biological and medical truths and information about the frontal lobe and all the stuff that it does and the dopamine. I'm sure you've heard that stuff. But what sits up there is our coping skills. And we do copious amounts of alcohol and drugs. We fry our coping skills. And that was me. I couldn't live life on life's terms. There was just no way. So all that's sort of the preface. I grew up in Minneapolis, suburb of Minneapolis, in the suburbs. I had everything I ever wanted. You know, I was a good student. I was a good athlete. I played sports in college. I got a scholarship. I sang in bands. I did all this stuff. Captain of sports. Even when I was on stage, even when I was a captain, my name was in print or I got a picture of whatever athlete of the week, I still felt less than. I still felt it wasn't good enough. You know? I'm sure there's a lot of people in this room that understand that and know that that's what alcohol did for me. It made me feel good enough, you know? And silly, because I would tell this to some of my friends after years, and they were like, oh, dude, you were this guy and that guy. Yeah, but I wasn't. Inside, I wasn't, right? Later did we find out that that's a God-sized hole that I'm filling with everything else but a higher power, you know? So I was pretty straight-laced for the most part. You know, went to college in Ohio, was in a fraternity, and played sports, and got good grades, and was that guy. And then I didn't get the job that I was going for, and I moved out to LA. You know? I just took a big breather. I lived in LA for about a year, year and a half, and got into the entertainment world, and I did acting on the side along with the singing and all this kind of stuff, and that was fun. But I got my taste of some extracurricular activity, if you will, out there. You know? It's very pure out in California. Different than Minnesota. And a lot of things, you know, whatever, things went. But then, you know, they weren't, it was just different. Life was looser out there, and I liked that. I moved back to Minnesota, and I actually got into the music business. And that was a ride, it was fun. I worked with a distributor, so here I am, 23, 24 years old, and I'm representing metal bands like Slipknot and getting their records into Best Buy. And artists like Jack Johnson and getting their records into Best Buy, I thought I had arrived. I had a boss that had gotten all of that stuff out of his system, and he was 10 years older than me, and he just looked at me as a guy that was young, dumb, and hungry, which is pretty much the truth, right? And I would run around, and I'd do all this stuff, but I was in the room, right? I wasn't making decisions. I was that guy, you know? But I was in the room, and anything goes. So I really started enjoying that, right? And I think we've all heard this, right? Where alcoholism for me was it was fun. There's no question about it. It was a lot of fun for a very long time. And then it was problems. And then it was, you know, fun with problems, and then it was just problems and nothing but problems, right? So that fun job, you know, it lasted a bit. And I got my first DUI, got a slap on the wrist, you know, came back and went back to work, and everyone's had a DUI where I work, so it was no big deal, you know, you just sort of roll with the punches. But I didn't learn from that. Like, you know, in retrospect, that was an opportunity, a learning opportunity, and I didn't learn. Nothing changed. You know, I put the good suit on, put the good attitude on, I got a shower, you know, bailed out of jail, went back into work like nothing happened. You know, and so not too much longer after that is when I went to Hazelden. So now we're talking 2002, and I got in on Hazelden, and I changed jobs. The music business was the problem, right? That was the issue. It wasn't anything to do with my drugs and alcohol. And I was an insurance salesman for a big health insurance company up in Minnesota. They were a big wig, and I come to find out that a lot of the customers that I dealt with, they loved the party, they loved the drink. Wow, drinking's here too, right? So I just went right into it. So after about a year or so, got DUI number two. Got the fun boot. If anybody's had the pleasure of putting a boot on, that was always a fun situation. Now, you know, instead of going to the AA meetings that you're supposed to go to on a regular basis, I had roommates that I lived with that would fill out the AA cards. You know, I'd go around the room and, hey guys, all right, you know, they weren't recovered. You know, they were just like coworkers. So I'd have them fill that stuff out. So that I would go to the, it wasn't even probation at that time, you know, it was just sort of a counselor, if you will, and I would drop those things off. I lost my license, but I didn't want anybody to know about what the situation I was in. So in Minnesota, it was kind of going into winter time. I got the DUI in fall, whatever. I would wear pants. I would take a taxi. We didn't have Ubers back then. I'd take a taxi to work at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'd bring a gym bag. I'd get a workout in. I'd work all day. And I would stay until 6, 7 o'clock at night. So my boss would come and leave, and I'd already been there, and I hadn't left yet, right? So I just figured nobody knew any different. And I worked. And I worked, and I worked, and I worked, and I worked. And I did well. You know, money wasn't, recovery wasn't the deal. I was like, just give me a bunch of money, and that'll make up for everything. So I tried that one, right? And I got an opportunity to get promoted. So I got promoted down to Naples. Now we're talking Memorial Day weekend of 2005. Now in order for me to go, and I've been in and out of meetings. I want to back up a little bit. Like I had been kind of going to meetings, if you will. I had a sponsor, kind of dipping my foot in the pool and all that, recovery world. And I had some very good experiences and some guys that knew I wasn't ready. And they just knew I wasn't ready. But I would talk a good game. I was a sales guy, you know, and at least I thought I was, right? So in order to go to Naples to get that final promotion, I had to go to this counselor, tell him what was going on, and he had to get me transferred because I still was in the system, in the court system. And he said, okay, I'll transfer you, but here's what I want you to do. First of all, I want you to get a meeting on your calendar right away. You got to go to a meeting. Get a gym membership because you're diabetic and health is very important to your life, and get a new bank account. Wells Fargo wasn't everywhere. I think it was Wachovia down there or something like that. I'm dating myself, right? So somewhere I'm flying over Nashville, I want to say, and I just said, I don't think I'm an alcoholic anymore. I think I left that back in Minnesota. So I pulled the new job, right? I pulled the new, I got making a lot of money, that was my God, right? And now I'm pulling a Geographic. Everything's going to be awesome, right? And I got to the airport, I got in my rental car, I went down to the Gold's Gym, got a gym membership, I went over to the Bank of America, I got a bank account, and I went right to the liquor store. And I got a DUI that night. I did not waste any time. I'm very sort of just a go-getter, you know? So in 2005, luckily enough, the computers didn't talk. So I got in, and they bailed me out that night. Luckily, right? Because three's a felony. But now I'm in trouble. Now I'm in trouble. And rather than, okay, Tom, let's go, let's forget, let's get in the meeting, let's get head ass and overcut into this, that's not going to happen. I had too much shame, fear, guilt. The only way that I knew how to get rid of that was drugs and alcohol. That was the only way. I was conditioned. And I continued to drink. And in the course of that summer, I got 3 DUIs in 3 months. So I got 2 earlier, and now 3 more makes 5. Brilliant. Luckily enough, I did bail out of my last one because I was in a blackout. Apparently, I kept saying, I'm diabetic. So rather than give me another blood breathalyzer, they gave me a blood test. They put me in the hospital. They couldn't wait for me to stay there until the blood test came back. So I was luckily enough, I bailed out. Now we're talking September of 05. My grandma had fallen. She lives in Indiana. My sister calls me up as I'm sitting at home, wallowing in my shit. And what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And she says, you got to get your ass up to Indiana because grandma's on life support and she's got 48 hours to live. So let's go. I'm on Florida. So before I went to Indiana, I called this place called The Retreat. And The Retreat's up in Minnesota. It's in Wayzata, Minnesota. It's run by a bunch of Hazelden folks. There's no medical doctors on staff. They don't do detox, but if you're a 12-stepper that needs to just get head, ass, and overcoat back into the program, it's a wonderful 30-day inpatient treatment center. I knew about it, and I called up, and I got a bed right away. At the time, I had a very good friend that lived in Miami, and he's like, Tommy, you know, there's three things that you could do. You could go back to Minnesota and go to treatment. He's like, and he was Colombian. He's like, you know how much money how long you can go in Colombia if you just cash out your 401k and your stocks? You can go to Colombia on 50 grand, it lasts a long time. The other option is that he was running a bunch of grow houses in Key Biscayne. And he was like, you could just live in one of my grow houses. So the insanity of that is I sat in that for a little bit, thinking that those are possible good options. Obviously, I'm here today, 20 years later, after making a decision to go back and start all over again. I did that, and hardest decision, best decision, you know? I was a little child. That's why I say it's the hardest decision. Those decisions, when you're confronted with God is everything or God is nothing, what's the choice to be, you know? Pick up the spiritual tools and walk this path of the unknown, or maybe the pain and suffering isn't going to be that bad. How bad is it going to be if I pick up again? Like, I seriously was debating that. You know? It says it in the book. I think we've all run across those pages before. So I went back to Minnesota. And a month in rehab, 2 months in the sober house, and then I turned myself in. So I'll cut to the chase. I was supposed to do 5 years in prison. Luckily enough, I had a judge that took sympathy on me. I got 2 years. And they also had a stipulation there with really, really good behavior. I'd only have to do 1 year in prison, and I could go to a halfway house and breathe into a breathalyzer 3 times a day. Because they said, you're an alcoholic. Like, you have history of it. And so I did that. But she said, if you miss one breathalyzer test, I'm gonna execute your sentence, and you're gonna do the whole 5 years up in prison in Moose Lake, Minnesota, which isn't ideal at all. It's like a frozen tundra out there. My sponsor told me when I was terrified to go in front of this judge, he says the only thing you can do at this point is just tell the truth. And so when I stood in front of her, and she just read the list of things that I did, she said, "Mr. Danford, did you do all those things?" And I said, "Yes, Your Honor, I did." I don't think I've ever really told the truth before. Like, that way, in that meaningful of terms. White lies here and there, big deal, who cares, right? Lies of omission, who cares? That was the first time I actually told the truth. I don't know, is that God working in me, doing for me that I can't do for myself? Probably, because here I am, 31 years old, and I'm finally telling the truth for the first time. So the journey was on, and I did my sentence. There was a lot of shit that went on. I will share that if anybody struggles with doing a fourth and fifth, I did a fourth and fifth in jail. I communicated with my sponsor at the time over letters. We had a set date. He came to visit. He says, "You have 30 minutes, and you had to clear out because you only get one visitor this specific day, and if I happen to have my mom decide that I'm just going to go up and check on my son or whoever, just jump on in, that visitation is over. You missed that out. So we had it all scheduled. And here we are, right? Pick up the phone. He picked up the phone. He said, go. All I can really say is about what was eating my lunch today. You know, and when you're locked up, and how he said this, all garden variety. Like, I was a suburban kid, and I had everything I needed and wanted. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter when you're locked up. You know, I had Hennepin County Correctional clothes, Hennepin County Correctional food, and Hennepin County Correctional shelter. You know, nobody opened my cell door open, you know, at 10 o'clock at night, let me run around and go, you know, play euchre with the guards. It didn't work like that, you know. God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. I ended up leaving with $50 and a bus pass. I had a high six-figure job the time before. I thought everything is about stuff, the shiny stuff. Everything, you know, the cars, the motorcycle, I had two condos. I did this, right? Gone. God did for me what I couldn't do for myself, 1,000%. There was no way I would give any of that up. I went to a halfway house in St. Paul, Minnesota, and I cut vegetables for $6.50 for an entire year. I was the figgy of Egypto. Pinche Tomas was my name. And I wasn't in front of the house. I wasn't that guy. I wasn't Mr. Showy, Mr. Sales Guy, Mr. Hey, would you like this on top of that with this? And no, I was cutting vegetables. And the Ecuadorians taught me how to put saran wrap around my face so I wouldn't cry all day long when I cut the onions. You know? And I was miserable, and I was resentful, and I hated my choices, and yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, I'd sit there, and I would think, and I would think, and I would think, and I would think, you know? And I got through it. But I wanted to drink every single day. I'll be honest with you. Every single day. I was sitting in a meeting, and there's a guy that does 12-step workshops with Sandy B. His name is Bob B. And he's from St. Paul. I'm sitting at a big men's meeting on Saturday morning. I was bitching and moaning. I was about this job and all that. And he's like, look, you have one job, and your job is to stay sober. You get up in the morning, you put a good day's work in, you go to a meeting, you go to the gym, but you look for people that you can help. And that's all you need to do. You need to do those four things every single day, son. That's all you got to do. God put you here for a reason. And again, I heard all that stuff. Didn't mean I was happy about it. I was still pissed. But I did what they told me to do. Right? I just kept coming back. I just kept coming back. Part of the reason was I didn't have any other place to go. I'd burned a lot of bridges. My parents did not want me at the house. I didn't live too far away from them. They would not let me into that house for the first 3 years of my sobriety. And trust me, they didn't want me around. So I did get a job, to get the job. And I started waiting tables. I was working at a supper club. Very, you know, easy. Come in at 6, leave at 10, make $100, and go on your way. So for those servers out there, applaud you. I love you. It's a wonderful thing. It's very difficult. You know, you got to deal with a lot of people. But as somebody in recovery, for me, that's what I needed, right? It's exactly what I needed. And it got me distance from my last drink, right? I used to cry to my sponsor about feeling like shit. Excuse me, I'm just taping them to bleep that out. Feeling like crap. Not being trusted. And he's like, this is pretty simple, right? If you want to have self-esteem, do esteemable things. And if you want to be trusted, be trustworthy. Right? It doesn't happen overnight. Right? You burned a lot of bridges. You can build that back. So we're looking at about 3 years. And I'm walking to my job. And I'm waiting tables. It's a fall afternoon. If you're, you know, from the Midwest, fall's a great, great season. Colors are changing. I don't know what it was. But it's like I'm walking, I've got a 4-block walk to get to my job, and everything changed, but at the same point, nothing changed. The road was wider, the sky was bluer, the grass was greener. I did not have to drink ever again. Ever again. It was removed. I didn't have that immediate situation like a lot of people talk about. I mean, I fought this thing tooth and nail just by myself. Just for my own compliance. I wouldn't surrender. I don't know why. Just what it was. Even with all the consequences, I still thought, God, if I have one more angle, I can maybe get it back. You know? And then that happened, and I was free. I didn't have to drink, ever. And then life started to get busy. I met my wife in sobriety. We had an awesome path. We, as I mentioned earlier, I did some acting, so I continued on that path and ended up relocating to Los Angeles. Lived there for 10 years. Moonlighted as an actor for quite a while. We ended up having 2 children. It's awesome. Life in LA is hard. It's great. I had phenomenal sponsorship out there for probably about the first year. And then we relocated to a different part of the town. And in LA, a different part of the town is like 2 hours away, right? And life got busy. Life got good. Work was going well, and I was auditioning all the time, and I had 2 kids, and I wasn't connected in the valley, in the Santa Clarita Valley, like I needed to be. And I went to one Wednesday night men's meeting, and I hadn't gone back for probably about 8 or 9 months, and I run into a guy at a Starbucks, and he was like, "Tom, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "I don't know this guy at all. You went to the Wednesday night meeting a while back. Where you been? What are you doing?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I'm busy. You know, I'm busy. Life's good. Life's really good." Of course, we kind of like, "Yeah, life's great. Leave me alone. I'm good. I got this." And he's like, "Why don't you come back? Why don't you come back?" By this time, I had about 8 years. So I went back, and the gentleman that was speaking that night said, "I had 8 years. I threw it away. And now I have 3. And I want to just take a poll." He says, in this Wednesday night group, there's probably 100 guys in there. He says, "Anybody that's got 0 to 1 year, raise your hand." A lot of guys raise their hand. "Anybody that has 1 to 5 years, raise their hand." A lot of people raise their hand. "Anybody that has 10 or more years," a lot of people raise their hand. A lot of old timers. And he says, "How many people have 5 to 10 years?" There's 3 of us in the room. He says, "Just like me. I got all my shit back. Life got good. I went to the buffet of life and I put everything on. I got the job. I got, you know, financial stability. I got married, my kids. I was busy going to, you know, PTA stuff and coaching." And then it crept up on me. And I'm sitting there going, "That's going to happen to me." And a guy nudges me, was right next to me, and he goes, "How much time are you in?" I said, "I got about 8 years." And he said, "You got a sponsor?" And I'm like, "No, not really." He's in the valley. The valley's like 1.5 hours away. And he's like, "Let's meet for coffee tomorrow." I'm like, "All right." I don't know who this guy is at all. I met him for coffee. And he says, what's your meeting schedule like?" And I'm like, I'm going to meetings. Kind of started to be a little bit more honest about it. And he says, "All right, well, I do this thing called the commitment sheet. It's pretty easy. You want to do it with me?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." So he's like, "You got a piece of paper?" I'm like, "No." And he goes, "I got a piece of paper." "So you got a pencil?" "No, I got a pencil." "Here you go." He says, "What I want you to do, I want you to write lines down, 6 lines down. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Tell me what you do all week." And I'm like, "Now?" And he goes, "Yeah, now." I mean, he just like exposed me to tell him how much time I had to go to meetings, and I wasn't going to meetings. He's like, "You need to go to 5 meetings a week. You need to get 2 service commitments a week, and one of them needs to be chairing a meeting." He's like, this is the differentiating between you're either going to go out or you're going to stay in, and you're going to get head ass and overcoat into this deal all over again. I didn't plan for any of that to happen. This guy just sat right next to me in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and told me what I needed to hear. I don't know. I didn't know this guy at all. I didn't say, "Well, I kind of got to warm up to you. I don't really know you. Like, maybe you're a, you know, a predator or a freak, and I don't know what I'm talking about. I just said yes. And I started down this journey again, and I didn't realize, like, what I was missing out. Life got really, really good. And again, nothing changed, but everything changed, you know? So, fast forward a little bit more. It's 2019, and my mom and dad now are full-time down in Naples, and my mom starts getting dementia, and my agent stopped calling me. Wasn't working out, and for a lot of different reasons. But I had kids, you know. I decided to spend time with my kids, and that's the choice you have in life sometimes. And so my wife and I decided to relocate to here to Tampa in the summer of 2019, and she's a Tampa girl, so that was good for her. I could have, you know, I could be closer to my family. My mom and dad could have more of a relationship with their grandkids. And I have, now I'll fast forward, or I'll go back a little bit. I worked for a phenomenal company now. They allowed me to transfer and take a territory, which is great. It's another sales situation, but it all seemed to work out, right? Obviously, COVID hit. That was tough. But before that, you know, I show up at a meeting, and I looked at the directory, and I didn't want to do what I did last time when I was in Naples, right? And I didn't want to get to you on the first night, because I'm prone to do anything like that. So I came to Tampa, and I looked at the directory, and there were a handful of meetings at Palmsia Presbyterian, and I lived down in that pocket of town at 7 o'clock. And I showed up at a meeting, and a guy says, "Where are you from?" And I said, "I just moved from LA." And he goes, "I got the perfect sponsor for you." I'm like, "Okay, great." And he goes, "But he's not here. But he'll be here. But he's not here." So he's like, "But just keep coming back." And so I think for like 2 weeks, I just keep coming back, and I run into the guy, I'm like, "Where's that boss you tell me about?" But I will say he's in the audience right now, so I'm blessed that I hung out for 2 weeks. And that was something I did because when I was brand new in the program, I was told to do 90 and 90. And I remember doing 90 and 90, and I was so proud, and I went to my sponsor back in Minnesota, and I said, "Hey, I just did 90 and 90. And he goes, "Great, do it again." So I did it again. I said, "Hey, I just did 180 and 180. And he goes, "Do it again." So I did 365 and 365, you know. And I kind of had that same type of attitude when I came here, because I'm brand new, and I'm walking into this rah-rah men's meeting, 7 o'clock, Palmsia. It was the summer, it's hot, it's packed. I don't know anybody. They don't know me. I mean, I could just sort of disappear and vanish, right? But I wasn't gonna, I couldn't do that. I had too much at risk. And so I just kept coming back, right? And I went to the YANA meetings. I never knew anything about YANA before. Tons of good sobriety there. I found my guys. I have kids that went to Roosevelt Elementary, and they said, "Hey, there's another couple that goes to Roosevelt. They're sober, or their kids go to Roosevelt, and they're sober. You guys got to get together." So all of a sudden, I have this host of friends in recovery, and I feel connected. Like, I don't know really anybody in the scene of South Tampa. I still don't. It doesn't matter to me. I'm not from here. I hear there's a big party in January, like down the parade, and people dress up as pirates. I think that's a little bizarre. I never experienced that before, but what I have experienced is the love that I have from the guys and the people in the program here in South Tampa, or the Tampa community, not just South Tampa. But again, I think that every step of the way, I've done enough AA and enough recovery, that when I've been in a situation where I could take a left instead of a right, God pushed me to the right direction. You know? I mean, that wasn't me. Those are not my, I'm selfish and self-centered. I want what I want, right? God's consistently letting me do the next right thing on a regular basis. And I'll say a lot of that happens to be because of the fact that I was told in the very beginning, get on your knees. Turn it over to whatever higher power you got up there, right? Kind of have a traditional God. It's what I was raised in my family. So it was kind of like, this is the direction that I'm going to go. Read the third step. Read the seventh step. Read the 11th step. Do the daily reflections. Do you one day at a time. Do you 24 hours a day. And meditate. I couldn't stand the meditating part for a very, very long time. I got to be honest with you. I love the reading. I could do that all day long. That was fun. Check the box. All right. I'm spiritually set. When I came here, I've been on this journey. And my sponsors challenged me really to get into the meditation, into step 11 on a regular basis. I know I have character defects. I know I want to get rid of them. Who doesn't want to be floating 5 feet off the ground all the time? It doesn't happen, you know. God has a way of grounding us on a regular basis. But if I can stay into step 11, that's big. So I can pray. But the meditation was hard. So I started with 3 minutes. Then I moved to 5 minutes. Then I moved to 10 minutes. Then I moved to 15 minutes. Now I'm at 20 minutes every morning. And that is because of my sponsors. Like, you can do this. It's great. It's awesome. Don't you love it? Don't you love it? And I was like, that's a little weird. And I fall into, I don't know what I'm thinking about, world. But that encouraged them to say it's awesome. And it is awesome. That's what's great about it today. I've surrendered to the disease of alcoholism, right? But I take my will back, but then I let it go again because I know I don't like that feeling when I got my will. I don't know if you all have that sense of that sausage grinder inside of you where you're like, oh, fuck, I did something wrong. I said something. I don't like this feeling of selfish and self-centeredness. And it happens on a regular basis, right? The beautiful thing about this program is, right, we can turn it over. We can turn it over right away. You got to be... I think they tell you to do these things every single day so you build up that armor, right? And the armor is against the defense against the first strength, and you know the next right thing to do. But I didn't know that next right thing to do for a very, very, very long time. And I've had wonderful sponsorship throughout my 20 years. No one's judged, you know? If I felt judged, it's because of me. It's because I feel about it. I'm a little kid, the little boy, right? The big finger wag. God, I hated the finger wag, right? That's the stuff I get to work on today, too, you know? So, 2025 was the hardest year of my recovery since I got sober. My wife went back out. I got my appendix taken out. I had a cancer scare. My son was diagnosed type 1 diabetic. My marriage is falling apart. All that being said, not once have I thought about picking up a drink or a drug. That used to be my go-to. Couldn't do without it. I'm so blessed to be in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never thought I could say that. But I can firmly stand up here and tell you that I'm a proud member of this program, and anybody that's wondering, hey, well, what's this thing all about? This is the best thing going. 1,000%. This is the best thing going. You can go anywhere, do anything. I go to metal concerts all the time. I went to Rockville in Daytona 3 years in a row. It's awesome. It's great. I don't need to drink alcohol. I don't need to have drugs in my system to have a great time. And it's because a lot of you that have helped me along the way to have these opportunities again. I try to do the next right thing on a regular basis. So hopefully I've said something today that you commiserated with or you empathized with or you said, I know exactly what that guy's going through. Because that's what this is all about, right? This recovery and this unity and this service. There's nothing better than it. So anyway, thank you for letting me be of service. I hope I helped out the rest of you.